with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute past the hour, and here we are, the 27th day of March 2014. Happy birthday, Doodle. Yes, it is our youngest's 17th birthday today. Happy birthday, my Doodle. Happy birthday indeed. It is also Thorn in the Side Thursday here on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is, of course, our home. That's where you'll find a selection of news stories for your examination. Chosen by several of us here on any given day. That's also where you'll find the brand new shiny media player, which you are free to use if you're on a PC. Or, I don't know, maybe it works with a Mac. It's hard to say, because I don't know. Or, of course, if you're listening on an iDevice or a tablet or something of a mobile nature, we encourage the use of the TuneIn and or Stitcher Internet Radio app. They work equally well, those two. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find access to the chat room. The chat room is free and easy to access, and there is a merry time to be had there every night. Try it out and find out for yourself. It really is a good time. Just click chat room and pick yourself out a nickname and have at it. Yes, indeed. And also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find, yes, the PayPal button, which is how we keep the bills paid hereabout, which is what has kept us on the air for, low, these 10 years. And we try to raise $150 every evening unless there is any kind of a shortfall. So this evening we find ourselves trying to raise $180. That would be 18 folks at 10, 2 at 90, 4 at 45, $180. So 9 at 20. Don't forget 9 at 20. So it should be doable, and I hope that can happen in short order so I don't have to say much more about it. But anyway, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, the PayPal button, or if you prefer to work with the traditional mail, the mailing address is also there under the Contribute tab at the top of the page. Yes, indeed, it really, really is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Before we jump into the Briar Patch, however... an update coming from Dr. John. The player on a Mac, it works great. It suggests iTunes to actually run the stream and sounds lovely. Thank you, Dr. John. A couple of public service announcements for you. This one comes in via Kate. She says, for anyone who has a medical need or a friend who does so in the Las Vegas or Reno, Nevada area, go to RAMUSA, RAMUSA.org, and check for the address of the upcoming venue of the remote area medical clinic that will be coming to Las Vegas and Reno, Nevada in the very near future. Kate notes, this is for medical, vision, dental, and women's health. First come, first served. The RAM webpage will explain it all to you. The dates are April 4th, 5th, and 6th in Las Vegas, and April 11th and 12th in Reno. And hopefully Kate will remind me, even as we get even nearer these two dates, in case, you know, even if you have access to health care and you live in that area, you probably know somebody who doesn't. Tell them this is available for them. This is important. Kate notes, I wish I could meet y'all there, but alas, my traveling days. are just about over. So thank you, Kate, for raising awareness of that. And another public service announcement, and we'll have more on this probably tomorrow evening. Got a note from our good friend Dr. Allen with the Waco Friends of Peace down in Waco. He wanted to let me know that the Waco Friends of Peace, and you know, you got to stop for a minute and talk about it. Having something like the Friends of Peace in a place like Waco, Texas is a big deal. It is important. It's important that there be a voice of sanity and a voice of reason in a place that is as dominated by right wingery as is that part of Texas. So on Saturday, March the 29th, that's day after tomorrow, between the hours of 2 and 4 p.m., the Waco Friends of Peace will be holding a protest against the Keystone XL pipeline. It'll be at the corner of Valley Mills Drive and Waco Drive. That's the corner near Payway. Dr. Allen notes, no issue is of greater importance to progressives. The survival of mankind and our fellow plants and animals is at stake. Already, climate change is responsible for 400,000 deaths annually, and we are in a mass extinction of other species. We demand that President Obama not approve the pipeline project, and our goal is to heighten awareness of the horrific dangers of this project among citizens in our community. Please join us in speaking out for life on Earth over the fossil fuel industry's endless gluttony for more and more profit. And again, I will hopefully remind you tomorrow, Friday on the front porch. If you are anywhere near Waco, and by anywhere near, I mean like 100 miles, whatever. If you're anywhere near Waco, these are tremendously committed, concerned, progressive people. And they're mighty good people. I've met them myself. And if you can make your way to Waco Saturday afternoon and add your voice and your goodwill and your common sense to the quantum of goodwill and common sense and voices that they will already have there, it means something. It means a lot. Wow, wouldn't that be a really profound statement to get a whole bunch of progressive Texans from all over Texas to Waco, the right there in the buckle of the Baylor Bible Belt, demanding that there be no Keystone XL pipeline? That would be huge. So, if it is at all humanly possible, begin making plans now. Get thee to Waco this coming Saturday, the 29th, between 2 and 4 p.m. at the corner of Valley Mills Drive and Waco Drive. That's the corner near Payway. Do it. You'll meet new friends. You'll link up and stand shoulder to shoulder and make the effort to stop this damnable nightmare from happening even stronger. When opportunities like this come along, it is best to take them. Texas Betsy says, send me a link to the Waco event and I'll advertise it on my Facebook wall. There's no link. I've given you the details. Protest against the Keystone XL pipeline by the Waco Friends of Peace, Saturday, March 29th, 2 to 4 p.m. at the corner of Valley Mills Drive and Waco Drive near Payway. And if you are in Texas, do as Betsy's doing. Put it up on your Facebook page, tweet it, what have you. and try to build a quantum of resistance to this thing. Because as Dr. Allen notes, when you stand up against the Keystone XL pipeline, you're not standing up for some sort of esoteric argument against, oh, a pipeline, oh, poo. You are standing up for the ability of human beings to go on being human beings on this here little blue-green time machine hurtling through the universe. The Keystone XL pipeline in and of itself is a catalyst of a potential extinction-level event. Let's see. Got a link here. Let me take a quick piece. And there it is. There is a website for it. Friends of Peace Waco. friendsofpeacewaco.blogspot.com. Go there and learn more. More importantly, go ye unto Waco, if you're anywhere near there, this Saturday from 2 to 4, and add your voice and your will. To this critical effort. Okay? Good. It is 12 minutes past the hour. And this really is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. And like I said, we've got a veritable bramble bush of thorns to mess with this evening. And I've got a clip here from All In with Chris Hayes. And I offer it not so much to expose the story, because, yeah, everybody knows the sign-up date has been extended for the Affordable Care Act in an effort to make sure that everybody who's trying to sign up gets to. And I have no issue with that. Now, the Merlot-sodden, fake-tan, spray-tanned Speaker of the House apparently said, "Oh, this is a joke." What was it, Tuesday, when they were having the H.R. 2824 debate, and I watched that all morning and afternoon. At one point, he came in because people were being indecorous in the House of Representatives and read them the rules, and it was like listening to Foster Brooks read the rules of decorum for the House of Representatives. Poor old John of Orange doesn't have just a hell of a lot of room to be calling anything a joke, but he had a hissy. Everybody's having hissies. So this creature by the name of Jennifer Stefano appeared on All In with Chris Hayes to talk about why it is that Obamacare is going to destroy America and eat babies and cause all of your bedding plants to die just like a hard frost. Like I said, you know the background. You probably already, but check out the audio, please.
Why should anyone care about this extension of the deadline? Who cares? So people are going to have a few more weeks to sign up.
Well, actually, Chris, the thing I wake up about and think about every morning is my children. And I think people should care about the deadline for the same reason that I wake up and millions of women, actually 85 million women across the country wake up and think about their children as well. That's how many mothers we have, because we really are having our choices removed from us as mothers and the health care that we can provide our children.
What?
And so the extension
No, really? It's Obamacare that's removing her choice, not the party she votes for year in and year out that wants to make sure that they've got some sort of iron-fisted death grip on the reproductive organs of women across America And you got to admit, you got to, I don't know, admire or at least acknowledge the chutzpah of a woman like Jennifer Stefano from the Koch, she gets a Koch Brothers check. She's a Koch, never mind. You got to admire the gall of her declaring that she speaks for every mother in America. Say whatever you will about the teabaggers and the Koch bastards. They got brass. They got brass. And I mean, Paul of Tarsus say? They are as of sounding brass. They're also full of sound and fury signifying nothing, but that's Shakespeare. But anyway, I have my reasons.
Deadline. Why? Because the president lied to us. The president promised us, and a lot of women who voted for him, a lot who didn't.
Answer this question first, though.
I'm going to answer.
Why does extending a deadline for 2 weeks take away the choices you have for your children? Explain
because
that
it continues to not allow people to go back and change this law. This law has made 7 million people lose their insurance. For the people who have actually signed up on the exchange, the McKinsey Institute, which is a consulting group that tracks these things nonpartisan, has found only 14% of them are actually people without coverage. People without health care right now who don't have health care for their children don't want this law, Chris.
First of all,
it's not helping them. That is true.
That isn't true.
There she goes again, speaking for everybody. Who tells this? Jesus. She speaks for everybody, all the uninsured people who, and there's nobody who's uninsured that wants the Affordable Care Act to remain a law. Jennifer, I'm uninsured. And I can assure you that I do not want the Affordable Care Act to be stricken. So there's one so that makes you a liar because you presumed to speak for me. And yet you're not saying anything I agree with. That makes you a liar. Of course, if she was a truth teller, she wouldn't be getting a check every couple of weeks from the Koch brothers. Never mind.
Fence that women are being forced
are
to have no
about?
Choices to
what?
Cover their children.
What are you talking
they don't
about? Your
want this law.
First of
that's
all,
that's why you have to push back the deadline. Can't get people to pay for it. You can't get people to sign up for it.
Jennifer,
it
what are you talking about? Do we have the chart?
You wouldn't care.
Do you realize that millions of people have signed up for this, right?
No. Let me make one thing.
Not on Norblap 12, they haven't, where she lives.
Clearly.
No. Millions
How
of people,
people
have signed
Chris,
up for it.
Of what percentage of those people don't have insurance? Only 14%.
Right, but
this is not helping the uninsured. Why will they not sign up for it?
Wait a second, Jennifer.
Why
this
will
is
they
key.
Not
no,
sign
this
up
is
for
a key.
It?
This is key. This is actually where this is an important point. If what you're saying to me, what I hear from you is, you're worried that not enough people signing up the exchange are actually people who are uninsured. And here's an interesting thing about the way this law works. A huge amount of the heavy lifting it's doing is insuring the uninsured is in the Medicaid expansion. And yet
actually,
Tea Party
fundamentally
after Tea Party...
Not true.
Yes, absolutely true.
And also,
the estimate,
it
Jennifer,
is hurting.
Absolutely true that,
Let
the,
me help
that
you.
A huge part of the heavy lift in insuring the uninsured is the Medicaid expansion. So take this from me. Answer this question for me. Throw out the mandate. Throw out the exchange. Throw out the deadlines you don't like. Forget about all that, okay? Bumping up Medicaid eligibility from 100% of poverty line to 133% of poverty line so that some working poor people can get some health insurance. What is the objection to that? Why does every conservative Republican governor oppose that? Explain that to me.
Ooh, number one, not true. Plenty of Republican governors, including Tom Corbett in Pennsylvania, including the Ohio governor, there are Republican
right.
governors that have expanded
and
Medicaid.
They are
so
getting
please,
killed.
Please.
Wait a second.
Please,
do you like that? Do you
spare me?
Jennifer,
spare
do you,
me that
what?
This is a Democrat Republican thing.
No, tell
okay?
me.
So,
okay.
Number one, it's
no,
not.
No, I want to hear
number
what you
two,
say.
Let me
I
finish
hear,
your question.
Jennifer, I want to hear
two,
what you believe. Do you believe in Medicaid
real,
expansion?
I have a real problem when you talk about raising the poverty level. That's people making $94,000 a year. They're not poor. That is taking resources from the poor. The expansion
no,
of Medicaid.
Okay, I think we've had enough of this. Or maybe not. First of all, you can't get expanded Medicaid if you're making $94,000 a year. unless maybe you're the Duggar family and you've got 17 quiver babies. Maybe then. And at $94,000 a year, and you are the Duggar family, and you're not on TV, and you're not getting a check for turning your wife's uterus into a clown car, you deserve to, you damned well are poor if you've got 20 kids and you're making 94 large a year. Jesus. Oh, just a little bit more because I'm such a masochist.
Not an economic.
No, that's a math trick.
It is not right and not fair. Excuse me?
It's not the Medicaid expansion.
My brother, yes, it is. You need to look at your facts.
No.
Take 133% of the poverty level in states like Pennsylvania and others. You get $94,000 a year. Now, I don't know what you consider rich, but that is an awful lot of money. I consider the poor, they do deserve a safety net. They do deserve help. And right now, Medicaid has failed those people. It is a moral issue. Do you know that people on Medicaid
Wait a second.
Okay, that is enough. I make no bones about my respect for Chris Hayes. He's very, very intelligent, and I will forever be thankful to him and to Melissa Harris Perry for not ignoring the ongoing disaster. And we do have some news on the water disaster here in West Virginia, if I can remember to get around to it. But for not ignoring the poisoning for profit of 300,000 human beings. Or some significant portion thereof, the water supply of 300,000 human beings. Thank you, Jeremy. I love the taste of a tennis ball and duct tape this early into the program. Yep. Yeah, and it came, and you know what? Jeremy's ahead of the curve. I don't even have to do the tennis ball warning anymore. He just straps in and gets ready with the top of the program. Thank you, Jeremy. Yeah, see, Marty's out there doing his ciphering and his gazinda. 140% of the poverty level is $94,000 a year? Huh? Yeah, it's for a family of five, it's more like $38,000 a year. And it goes down dramatically from there. But none of this is actually the point. The point here is, and we have, and you know, from time to time, we have little philosophical discussions about this point here on the Horn. Bob, why don't you invite some wingnuts on once in a while so you can kick their ass all over the radio and we can all enjoy listening to you do it? That's why. With all the respect I maintain for Chris Hayes, and knowing how few progressive broadcasters there are on television, and among progressive broadcasters on television, what a much narrower subset it is to be a progressive broadcaster with a really good working brain. When time is so precious, why do you let this blithering idiot on your air? How does that happen? Never mind how, why? What benefit is Jennifer Stefano the quantum of the discussion about the ongoing crisis that is access to health care in this country? What? I mean, iota. Let's use some of those mathematical terms for teeny tiny subatomic things. Is this woman adding to any quantum of knowledge? I think the answer is obviously because she's just another one of those smart-ass right-wing screamers who tries to make her point by refusing to stop talking and carry on a conversation and tries to over-talk. The answer is zero, less than zero. She not only doesn't add anything to the quantum of knowledge, she destroys the value of intelligence and learning just by breathing in and breathing out. She is a moron, certainly. She is an idiot. I mean, she's stupid with a capital St. And so if you ever find yourself asking, gee, I wonder why Bob never invites some wingnut on so that he can play with them like a cat playing with a mouse. That's the answer. Life is too short. And the availability of space in which to get progressive ideas across is entirely too small to give even one subfraction of an instant to the likes of a Jennifer Stefano out there speaking for every woman in the United States and every uninsured person in the United States. And this is not a critique of Chris Hayes or of his staff. This is a critique of a mindset that says that those people over there, knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, drooling, have anything to add to the national discussion about where we're going and why we're in this handbasket. And for some reason or other, the right wing's figured it out. How many honest-to-God, really no-kidding liberals or progressives are there? I mean, if one of them shows up over on Radio TV Rwanda, you can be assured that that person will be surrounded by a confederacy of dunces of at least two, maybe three, and possibly six mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking right-wingers. So that's why we have a strictly adhered to, strictly enforced ban on right-wingers on this program. Zero. None. They are not allowed. Now, to be fair, I do not screen calls. I can't screen calls. The phone line rings. I push the button on hold, and when it's your turn, I bring whoever you are on the air. A minute or two of something like, I want the flat tax, or Obama's destroying the best health care system in the world, or I don't understand why that Kenyan Muslim hates white people, any of that. Now, I don't run around hanging up on people, but I will and would do that. They are not allowed. No. So maybe that's a little bit of a... Yeah, thank you, Irish Dave. Bob, how much is that in parts per million in bitcoins? Jesus, not the bitcoins, please. And then Irish Dave says, Bob, don't do that. That's not your job. It's Tom Hartman's job. And I don't want to work anybody else's corner. And Kevin, with a question, only 14% of those who signed up were uninsured? Huh? I guess she means by only 14% that those 14%, most of whom I'd make a rough guess are women and children, don't count. Is that what she's saying? I hate these people and their lies. Nobody likes to, you know, we're liberals, we're progressives. We don't like running around hating people. But the thing is, the Jennifer Stefanos of the world teach us to. We have been, to borrow a phrase from, was it Rodgers and Hammerstein? South Pacific, carefully taught. And this note coming in from Dr. John. I'll go one further on the ACA. My wife and I are insured, and our insurance sucks out loud. We would love to be eligible for subsidies under the ACA to buy better coverage. Yeah, because in civilized states, there are options. Now, here in almost level West by God, Virginia, the reason I'm insured is because it's $600 a month for a policy with a $10,000 deductible because there's only one company offering them, and begrudgingly that, and that's Blue Cross Blue Shield. Yeah. So I just, this being thorn in the side Thursday, I felt like there might be some benefit in just sharing her screeching, her shrewish howling, so as to sort of point out why those people have no business on this program. I mean, I get right-wing pitches. I probably get something approaching 50 to 100 a day. Very seldom any left-wing or progressive pitches because we're not very good at this. But I'm not ever going to invite Eva Dufay on because it would be stealing. They would be stealing from you and from us and from the precious finite time that I talk about at the end of the program almost every night. Stealing that is the worst kind of theft. So part of the job, as I define it and deem it, is to make sure that no idiot right-wingers fall through the cracks and find their way onto this program. Texas Betsy pointing out with regard to Jennifer Stefano, I bet she works for Hobby Lobby too. $94,000 is where the subsidy starts for Blue Cross Blue Shield Gold, not the Medicaid expansion. For a family of four. Thank you. Thank you, Betsy. And Dr. John, I'd like to offer a thanks to our buddy the Angry Indian for reblogging my blog post on the new National Geographic program about looting Nazi battlefields. No, it's not at all too inside baseball. Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. John. And by the way, the blog to which Dr. John refers is Digs and Docs, DigsandDocs, digsanddocs.wordpress.com. Dr. John also pointing out with regard to Jennifer Stefano, according to her WordPress page, Jennifer is Pennsylvania State Director for Americans for Prosperity and as a columnist for, you knew it, didn't you? You just knew it. Breitbart.com, says Dr. John. Oh, my! Her Twitter page describes her as defender of liberty, lover of chocolate. Oh, my, again! As opposed to all of us lefties who hate liberty and chocolate, I guess. I also found a photo of her, obviously in a family way, wearing a T-shirt that says, Yo, President Obama, don't tread on my mama, with a goddamn Gadsden flag and an arrow pointing uterusward. In sum, says Dr. John, a class act. Where's the farm that they grow these right-wing attack blondes? I bet it's just dripping with GMO crops. And I also bet Jennifer Stefano terrifies her child with tales of austerity Santa. Austerity Santa leaves only one gift, copies of the Fountainhead. In fact, you might be tickled to know, thank you, Dr. John, oh, Jesus, copies of the Fountainhead. Oh, you mean not Atlas Shrugged? If you go over to headonradionetwork.com, and I'll do it with you right now, to those news stories that I post every day, you'll find an interesting story. If you scroll down, poor hit hardest by cuts in crisis-hit Europe. Welfare, this is from Agence France-Presse. Welfare cuts ordered in the wake of Europe's economic crisis are hitting the poor disproportionately hard, with child poverty rising and people's health at risk, a leading Catholic charity warned on Thursday. A new report by Caritas depicted an unfair Europe struggling with disturbing poverty levels after studying the impact of the financial crisis in Cyprus, Greece, Ireland, Italy, Portugal, Romania, and Spain, like we were talking about last night. Ukraine, meet Greece. Greece, Ukraine. I think there's something you people you'd like to talk about. Cuts to public services disproportionately affect lower-income groups, and problems accessing health care are impacting negatively on people's health, its report said, Caritas's report. Child poverty in the European Union has increased from under 20% to more than 22% in the last 3 years. Welcome to the new normal. Reaching over 30% in Ireland, said the organization's General Secretary, Jorge Nuno Meyer. Even Cyprus, long considered an affluent society, has a poverty rate of over 29% among older people, the report said. Then this, this quote from Jorge Nuno Meyer. Austerity measures have failed to solve problems and create growth. The European project and cohesion in our societies is at stake. Meyer continued on and said, families are now exhausted. They cannot continue paying. A second wave of poverty is expected. The negative impact can last for decades. He expects that the economy in Spain could take up to 20 years to recover to pre-crisis levels. That's the entirety of a childhood. That's children knowing nothing but poverty. And insofar as children living in poverty, how well equipped are they going to be to climb out of it once they're done with their childhood in the 20 years that it will take for the economy to recover in Spain? You know, not from a collapse, but from a deliberate act of predation that we recognize as austerity. The number of households living in extreme poverty in Spain has risen to 1.5 million human beings. That's from 900,000 before the crisis hit in 2007. How did that all happen anyway, by the way? Caritas unveiled the report in Greece. And Caritas called for an urgent shift from financial to social goals as it accused governments of failing to address the moral responsibility of banks for the crisis. Oh, that's how. The financial system must not be insulated from risk with the consequent incentive to reckless behavior. The same is likely to happen again unless a different approach is taken. All true. So what I was getting at is... the way we post these stories on the Horn webpage, there's an opportunity to offer a comment, but it only comes at the bottom, not the top. So you got to go all the way to see if there is one. But I couldn't resist working. Mentioned it off the cuff during the program last evening, and Dr. John picked up the ball and ran with it. And so I saw this story and I thought, I think this is what we were talking about. The poor better not pout, they better not cry. It doesn't really matter because they're going to die. Austerity clause is coming to town. He doesn't care if you are sleeping or if you are awake. Everything you have is what he wants, so his profits he can take. I like that. I like that a lot. I think there's something there we can work with. Austerity clause is coming to town. After town, after town, after town, after town. Yeah. the incorrigible Irish Dave, going back to Jennifer Stefano, said, I'm guessing Jenny doesn't much care for the dark chocolate. Oh, I'll bet she doesn't. Robert in Australia. Private health insurance rates to rise on April 1st in Australia. Private health insurance rates will rise on April 1st. They're expected to rise somewhere between 5.06% and 6.02%. And that's with the inflation rate running between 2.5 and 3%. Australian consumers are being advised to shop around for the best deal. I expect that a huge number of people will simply drop their private health insurance on April 1st, as they did about a decade ago when the same thing happened. At that time, the federal government had to introduce a 30% tax rebate for people with private insurance to stop them from dropping their private for-profit driven insurance. Yes, says Robert, corporate welfare saved the day for the private health insurance industry, and those without private insurance were punished for not having it by having their Medicare levy increased from 1% to 1.5%. I don't see the federal government increasing the 30% rebate this time around. There's a limit to what some of our pollies will put up with, believe it or not. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Robert. And see, that point is well taken, because the health insurance companies aren't, you know, they don't need these rate increases because they're delivering such a brilliant product. They have to have these rate increases because they suck off their infrastructure to create profits for their executives. The profit motive is at the very miserable beating heart of the healthcare insurance crisis. It's profit. Profit is what's killing it. And by extension, killing people. Ah, yes, okay, thank you. Thank you, Devin. The Ukrainian version of austerity clause is Ukrampus. Ukrampus. In answer to to my remark about we aren't good at this, meaning messaging, message getting out, and what have you, Steve points out why we aren't good at this. Issues don't often lend themselves to sound bites. Quite simply, we aren't good at sound bites because we see complexity and nuance both require discussion. Amen to that. But what I'm getting at is we're not good at getting our messages out, because the people who can message things generally don't. There is a vast, and I mean vast, network of right-wing PR flacks who, it appears, have but one job, and that is to send out blast emails every day hustling some right-winger to tell some, give, spew some right-wing line of unmitigated BS to a credulous people. And that's what we're not good at. We don't have a bunch of well-funded PR firms that are out there saying, let me schedule so-and-so on your program to talk about blah, blah. Part of this is because the right wing owns the terrestrial airwaves that supposedly belong to we the people, but who are we kidding? Let's not kid ourselves. The other part is that money is not put toward that in any significant numbers. And I should note, there are exceptions. I get some nice guest pitches from The Nation, and periodically one will just sort of show up freelance in my inbox. But let's see here. Let me just give you an example. I won't have to go far. Breaking: Fifth Circuit panel upholds Texas pro-life, pro-woman law. Oh, dear. Beth, sit down. Duct tape. And this is from the Susan B. Anthony list. Yeah, a bunch of right-wingers co-opted Susan B. Anthony, who struggled for women's suffrage, and turned her into an anti-abortion goon. This afternoon, the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld a law enacted in Texas last summer to protect women and unborn children from unscrupulous abortion providers and require adherence to FDA protocol when administering abortion pills. I'm sorry, Beth. You're kicking furniture, aren't you? I'm sorry. Abortion pills! The court's panel of judges, all women, overturned the lower court's decision. Planned Parenthood will likely appeal this decision to the United States Supreme Court. The national pro-life group, the Susan B. Anthony List, praised the Fifth Circuit for upholding. All praise the Fifth Circuit, praise them, praise worshipful Fifth Circuit. They praised the Fifth Circuit. We applaud the Fifth Circuit for upholding this common sense measure to safeguard women from unscrupulous abortionists. But of course, it doesn't protect women from unscrupulous right wing hacks and theo-fascists who want to control the workings of their bodies. Not so much protection there, which is needed badly. Said Susan B. Anthony List President Margie Dannenfelser. And I think they've got some cream out there that'll clear up your Dannenfelser. From Kermit Gosnell's House of Horrors to one Planned Parenthood's meat market style abortions. There's a little grinder back there. Fetus. Fetus. 99 cents a pound, fetus burger. You know what happened to the butcher who backed into his meat grinder, right? Yeah, he got a little behind in his work. Thankfully, pro-life legislators in Texas took notice and sought to protect women from such negligence and brutality in their state. It is an outrage that America's target largest abortion provider, Planned Parenthood, would seek to undo this and other safety standards. Yeah, because it's a safety standard. Oh, come on. You know, you can lie to each other and you can lie to yourself. But Jesus, don't lie to the rest of us who have functioning brains. Marjorie Dannenfelser Gesundheit. We know better. We know you're a fascist theocratic thug. We know that you fall asleep master. We know Marjorie Dannenfelser that you read The Handmaid's Tale and masturbate to it. Okay, Marjorie, we know that. And you've got all the good pages turned down. Yeah, exactly, Devin. Terror of the zygots. But there's oodles of these. Every day. Oh, let's see. Here's one. You're going to love this. Every now and then, I like to share my right-wing pitches with you because, well, why should I do all the screaming? This comes from the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. Okay, I admit, I signed up for this one. Pastor Bob Kincaid. Dear Pastor, just a few weeks ago, Arizona became the latest state to knuckle under to anti-faith forces allied with the homosexual agenda when the governor vetoed a perfectly good bill that a diverse group of law professors agree would have, you know, diverse, the white guy, the white guy, the white guy, and the white guy, a perfectly diverse group, yes, perfectly diverse, agree would have strengthened religious freedom for the citizens of that state. Mississippi is their next target. Really? Over two decades ago, Congress passed the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, passed unanimously by the U.S. House 97-3 by the Senate, and I wonder who them three heathen communists were, and signed into law by President Clinton in 1993. Where's the passage about him being a womanizing anti-American demon? I think they're slipping a little bit over at the American Family Association. In 1996, the U.S. Supreme Court held in City of Bern versus Flores that the federal roofers protections do not apply to state and local regulations. Since then, 18 states responded by passing laws modeled after the federal roofer. Mississippi has not yet passed such a law preventing government discrimination against religious exercise, but it's under consideration now, and it's already under attack. Whether you live in Mississippi or not, you can stand in solidarity with the effort by signing a letter from pastors and leaders to state legislators. Oh, dear God, that's a link, isn't it? Oh, this ought to be comical. It starts out, religious liberty is the first freedom enumerated in our Bill of Rights. We've been over this, haven't we? Yes. It could just as easily have been not quartering troops in the House. There was no conscious decision to decide which right was more important than others. Over two decades ago, Congress passed yada, yada, yada. Mississippi hasn't. We, the undersigned pastors and leaders, believe the Mississippi state legislature's attempted to enact the religious freedom protections contained in the federal roofer. I love how they try to take the teeth out of one of the most compelling arguments against this foolishness. But we are not persuaded by the arguments of some who erroneously compare such legislation with laws in place during the dark days of segregation. Get it? Dark days of segregation. Oh, they are a witty bunch. Fearing that religious freedom would slow the steady march of enforcing their comprehensive agenda, the pro-homosexual activists have used their media allies. Really? You've got media allies? Who? Oh, wait, Ellen, Oprah. Powerful, you know, the gay force is strong with them. And even some church leaders, who will burn in hell, to distort the truth. No, I'm not signing on anything that's signed by Jerry Boykin. Oh, my God. You remember Jerry Boykin? It used to be General Jerry Boykin when he said that what we were doing in Somalia was proving to those heathens that our God was bigger and meaner and more badass than their God. And then, of course, the lead signature is Tony Darman. Yes, Mother Bates. Perkins of the Family Research Council. On and on and on and on. Shut up and up. For evidence, this goes back to the American Family Association. For evidence, I offer a letter sent by 350 or so liberal pastors and leaders from all over the country who apparently agree with elements of the homosexual agenda. We're not sure which elements, whether it's the whether it's the wall sconces or the little shell-shaped soaps in the guest bathroom. We're not sure which part, but some of whom are aligned with liberal financier. Wait for it. George Soros. Wait, what the hell happened? George, there he is. George Soros. In it, they liken roofer legislation to Jim Crow laws, which is absolutely ridiculous. Worse than that, it is downright deceptive. Should we allow voices such as these to sway these legislators without a rational response from those who stand to lose the most when religious liberty is threatened, which it is not and has never been? So you see what I'm dealing with. Uh-oh. I think I bothered Betsy. Unscrupulous? Oh, there's about a dozen question marks. Bob, I was there all summer, Senate and House. There was one person arrested for illegally performing abortions in Texas in the past 10 years. One! Care to guess how many unscrupulous and illegal abortion providers there are now? Yeah, exactly. I rely upon, as my source in these sorts of things, I rely on our friend Beth, who is who has dedicated her life to making sure that women have reproductive choices in Texas. Can we, since they're throwing around unscrupulous like a damn frisbee, can we use unscrupulous in describing the phony baloney crisis pregnancy centers that have sprung up all over Texas like mushrooms after a spring rain? Now, you just come along, sugar. We'll make sure you stay real good and pregnant, and you're going to have that baby for Jesus. Amen, amen. Ain't God good? Yeah, I think we can. Okay, I'll work a little harder on that, Marty, since we needed more reverb last time. Dr. John with a note, Planned Parenthood. This is such a nonsense meme. The family planning services that Planned Parenthood provides actually prevent nearly a million unintentional pregnancies and abortions every year. Abortion services account for 3% of Planned Parenthood's services, the vast majority of which occur in states that have gone out of their way to restrict family planning access for women and couples. In other words, they complain about a mess that they themselves created. Yes. Jesus. We need to take a little break, and then we'll go to the phones. Lines are open, 304-658-3333. And, of course, you can always reach via Skype as well, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N on Skype. Email comes in to bobkincaid@gmail.com. You can follow me, and I would love it if you did, on Twitter, @BobKincaid. I think we could really grow the horn if we get a lot better at the tweeting. And then, of course, on Facebook, two pages, Bob Kincaid, and the other one being the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, which you can like at your leisure. And growing that would be a real big deal, too. And apart from that, we also have on the way, this here being Thursday, the 27th of March, again, happy birthday, Doodle. And I'm sure you join me. And she is amazing. Our Doodle is. For me, it's like having a 17-year-old Gracie Allen. You know she's smart, and she's got a wit like a razor blade. But she can play Dippy. As well or better than I think than anybody I have ever known. I mean, she's good. And today is her big 17th birthday, so yes, Doodle. From your daddy and the whole Horn family, happy birthday. And a reminder, we are trying to raise $180 this evening to stay even as we run toward the end of the month of March, $180. Thank you, Sal. Sal is there evening after evening. Thank you so much, Sal, getting us started. And Sal would love to have a little bit of company in helping to keep the lights on and everything, working here. We kind of dodged one with the miraculous faith healing of the phone processor, but it doesn't mean we got to let up in fundraising. So, again, thank you very kindly, Sal, for getting us started. And again, the Green News Report is on the way, after which your calls, your conversation, and more filibobstering if that becomes absolutely necessary. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Mother Nature.
Thursday, March 27, 2014.
This will have to be reckoned with as a failure of policy, given the repeated warning over and over and over again, over a period of generations in clarion terms, warning that this was going to happen.
More disturbing details on the deadly Washington landslide. Rooftop solar will endanger the electric grid?
That's another bullshit argument,
says the former energy secretary. Plus,
there's a huge procrastination penalty when it comes to emitting carbon into the atmosphere.
Irreversible climate change could arrive as early as 2036.
All of those irreversible penalties and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Solar energy has always sounded way too gay for rednecks. Instead, say, invade the sun and take its oil.
There you go. Now we're talking. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, earlier this week I spoke about the repeated warning from scientists, geomorphologists up in Washington State, warning against catastrophic failure that has in fact happened up there in this landslide, deadly, horrible landslide. You've got more information on that today.
Yes. Right now, as we go to air, 25 dead and 90 still missing. And while near record rainfall was the direct cause of the landslide, the Seattle Times reports that excessive logging may have contributed, with aerial photos indicating a clear-cut logging operation went outside the safe boundary approved by regulators in the area and stripped trees from the mountaintop directly above where the landslide occurred.
And you can see this clear-cutting in these photographs from the U.S. Geological Survey. The cutting comes down just to where the entire side of that mountain just gave away.
Yeah, and anti-logging activists say state regulators really aren't doing enough to rein in logging companies.
Color me shocked.
The oil industry is celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Exxon Valdez oil spill with a spate of new oil spills. As we reported earlier this week, first there was the significant crude oil spill into Galveston Bay. Now, a BP refinery in Michigan that was just upgraded has spilled 21,000 gallons of crude oil into Chicago's water supply, Lake Michigan. Way to go, BP.
Way to go, oil industry. Unbelievable.
Climate change is going to affect nearly every aspect of human life and will cost trillions of dollars in lost economic output. That's the cheerful consensus from a leaked draft of the next UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report. It focuses on the impacts of climate change and is due out next week. Now, the window to act on climate change by cutting emissions is closing, according to Michael Mann of the famous hockey stick temperature graph. In a new paper, the climate scientist calculates that at our current rate of carbon dioxide emissions, we will hit 450 parts per million CO2 in the atmosphere as early as 2036, and that has consequences, as he explains to Tom Hartman.
If you do the math, we hit that 450 parts per million number in a matter of a couple decades, and we probably lock in at least 2 degrees Celsius and some very dangerous and potentially irreversible impacts on the planet.
Got that? In just 22 years, we commit to global temperatures rising at least 2 degrees Celsius. And it won't stop there.
The CO2 we are putting into the atmosphere right now is going to add to warming for decades into the future. It will cause sea level to rise for centuries into the future. So there's a huge procrastination penalty when it comes to emitting carbon into the atmosphere.
And I suspect we are not going to be ready to pay that penalty.
Not at our current rate, but there is some good news. Renewable energy technologies are scaling up faster than predicted, booming around the world. Wind and solar made up nearly 90% of all new electricity generation installed in the U.S. just last year.
And when you say booming, unlike with the oil and natural gas, you don't mean exploding. You mean it's actually increasing in sales around the country.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Speaking of the boom in renewable energy, former Energy Secretary Stephen Chu has a blunt message for utilities trying to preserve their monopoly over electricity by trying to kill off rooftop solar. He says it's, quote, bull. He says utilities should instead embrace the rooftop solar revolution and adapt their business model.
As solar and batteries especially get cheaper and cheaper, the utility company partnership with a private company owns the modules. They own the battery. They use your roof. They sell you electricity for cheaper.
Yeah, you know, like it or not, we live in a capitalist society. There are all kinds of ways for people to make money off of renewable energy. The problem is they are ways that will cut into the profits of the fossil fuel industry, oil, coal, natural gas. That is the only reason for this ongoing war on science, this ongoing war on reason. For much more on those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Please consider a donation to help us stay on your public airwaves. And don't forget, you can download us anytime via iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn, where we hope you will leave us a good review so more people will hear the Green News Report. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I'm sold 3008, you sold 2008. I got that boom, 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 that future boom, boom, boom. Let me get in that.
Boom, 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 gotta get that. Boom, gotta get that. Boom, 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 gotta get that. Boom, boom, gotta get that. Boom, 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 that.
I love that song. I do. 10 minutes past the hour. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And note coming in from Asa, going straight to the phones. In just a minute. I'm going forward to the phones. Note from Asa. Jesus Christ, Bob. These spills are happening at such unprecedented breakneck pace but I'm almost sure they're doing it on purpose. I suspected it before, but have you ever heard of this many spills in such a short time? No. I mean, they are every day. What? And, well, not a religious man, but if I was, I would blame the goddess of irony. Really, I would. But in point of fact, there probably is a rational approach and a rational explanation for this. The pipelines carry gas and oil, which are about making profits. And if profit is all you care about, you squeal like a stuck hog if you have to put some of them profits back into your infrastructure. And all of these pipelines and so much of this infrastructure is so ancient and poorly tended. Hello, Freedom Industries. No, well, I mean, we were only indirectly talking about you. That it stands to reason that they would fail catastrophically in clusters. At least I think it stands to reason. Yeah. By the way, before going back to the phones, first of all, thanks very much. Thanks very much to Mark, who just put a big dent in tonight's fundraising. Thank you very much, Mark. We have only $75 to go now to meet this evening's fundraising goal, and I am sure that Mark and Sal would love to have a little bit more company. We're nearing the end of March, and we need to finish the fundraising on schedule and not in a hole. So thank you, Mark, and thank you, Sal. Thank you very, very much. Betsy pointing out, okay, the Horns Facebook page, it's actually a group, not a page. But it's facebook.com/groups/headonradio. Go there if you haven't before. Like it, follow it, and it's a good place to continue, you know, because the discussion continues on that page. Kate with a note. Subject line, allergic to duct tape on my face. Besides, I don't want to throw up in the back of my throat. However, I am choking on all of these issues and sound bites. I feel so sad that it appears that all the work we early radicals did back in the last century has all gone for naught. It makes me want to throw my dress up over my head and go screaming around the room. Oh, that's right, I don't wear dresses. Well, you won't be going to the Christian Tabernacle in Virginia either, Kate, by God. And my hair is short. I'm heartsick when I consider what my baby sisters will have to suffer in the future. The goddess will get hers. In the meantime, we still have a lot of work to do. And that we do. And since Kate alludes to it, yes, there is an update on little 8-year-old Sonny. Apparently, the Timberlake Christian School has been taking a little bit of heat for trying to, well, not trying to, but successfully abusing an 8-year-old girl who likes to collect baseballs and wear boots and have short hair. You may recall that the principal of Timberlake Christian School said, "We believe that unless Sonny and her family clearly understand that God has made her female and her dress and behavior need to follow suit with her God-ordained identity, that TCS is not the best place for her future education." Jesus, please get her out of there. They're not giving her an education. They're giving her an indoctrination. But it turns out that Liberty Council is on the job. On the case, Liberty Council, you know, because tormenting an 8-year-old for how her hair is cut, that really does define liberty, doesn't it? "This matter is far beyond a simple hairstyle and tomboy issue as inaccurately portrayed." That's what Liberty Council said. "It's not about that at all. At no time did the church or the school or state or imply that SK was sexually immoral or the like." Or the like? It turns out it's a bathroom issue. Yes, once again, we have more Christian fundamentalists who are obsessed with how children go potty. Really? When elementary children and their parents or guardian express concerns regarding use of the restroom and other matters arising from the sensitive issues here, the school has a duty to, they said duty, to in a bathroom story, to address those concerns to ensure that all interests are heard and protected in accordance with the Christian mission of the school. I missed that part in the Gospels where Jesus got all worked up about people going potty. Of course, these fundies probably think that since he was holy and perfect and the Son of God and made flesh, that Jesus probably didn't ever even go potty himself. Hard to imagine, but, you know. No, it turns out that what the Timberlake Christian school was perturbing themselves and bothering God about is students who did not know Sonny were confused whether she was a boy or a girl. An official said they understood she was undergoing counseling about her gender identity. On those occasions in which the atmosphere or conduct within a particular home is counter to or in opposition to the biblical lifestyle that the school teaches, really, the biblical lifestyle, like in Genesis, where Lot's daughters get daddy drunk and, yeah, boom, 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 right? Yeah, that biblical lifestyle. The school reserves the right within its sole discretion to refuse admission of an applicant or to discontinue enrollment of a student. This includes, but is not necessarily limited to, living in, condoning, or supporting sexual immorality. Really? The 8-year-old was being sexually immoral? I thought the Liberty Council said she wasn't, but there we are. Practicing homosexual lifestyle or alternative gender identity or promoting such practices. One of the few things coming from little Sonny. Sonny said, I should just be able to be me and not let them worry about it. Out of the mouths of babes, but bigots will be bigots, and sick fundamentalists will be sick fundamentalists. Yeah. Texas Betsy pointing out, the 7th grade hallway has one male and one female teacher restroom. Since there are only two male teachers on the floor, women often use the men's room if the women's room is occupied and no one cares. How many restrooms did they have in the desert? Well, you know, it's kind of like taking a kitty cat to the beach. It's one big sandbox. So I thought you'd appreciate that update on the poor child's struggle with existence. You know, life can be good. Life can be sweet. But always you have these miserable freaks who, being miserable and hung up and twisted themselves, feel compelled to make sure that they pass on the pathogens of their own freakouts to the rest of the world. Jeebus. To the phones. 304-658-3333 if you want to join the conversation. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good afternoon, Bob.
What's happening, Kevin?
Oh, not much. You mentioned something in the first part of the last hour, and you kind of alluded to it here recently, about, I forget how you said it in the first part of the first hour, but you mentioned the word indoctrinated.
Yes, that's what a Christian school education is. It is indoctrination, not education.
Well, yeah, I can attest to that having gone through it. But we've been indoctrinated in this country for a very long time. I enjoy listening to old-time radio and do that quite a lot. And I take particular note of things on old-time radio commercials or even shows, especially like from back in the 40s with the war going on, and then in the 50s with I was a communist for the FBI, which is nothing but a total propaganda show. And it just, you know, when you hear this stuff 60 years later and you realize how the American public back then was just totally clueless and still is, because it ties in with that clear, you may have heard Desi and Brad mention the clear cutting up there in Washington that caused landslide. Kind of like mountaintop removal, only another way. And look what happened.
Yeah.
Probably over 100 people have been killed. Now, I wonder how many people are going to take note of the fact that it was due to the deforestation of that area.
Right, or for shorthand, wonder how many people will take note of the fact that it was because of job creating.
Right. And of the fact of... the fact that the profit goes to the corporatist in the top 1%.
I'll pretty much bet you, Kevin, that the head of the timber company that had all those trees logged out of there and clear cut wasn't living on the mountain or anywhere near it.
For sure. But I still have that question. Will there be the proper amount of outrage once the rescue and recovery operations are done and the total amount of dead are known, to realize that it was because of the greed of the 1% that this disaster happened?
I'm just curious. I wonder, because my mind works this way, I wonder how many fundies have blamed this on the homosexual agenda.
I haven't heard it yet, but I'm sure someone's going to come out and say it was God's punishment for the homosexuals there in Washington State. Funny, but it was a lot of religious people, I think, you know, from what I've heard of those that are missing and dead. Sounded very religious to me. So why does God punish the religious or his people instead of the homosexuals themselves? It doesn't often seem to work that way, you know? And I just get really frustrated over the fact that people can't make these little connections. If God is so upset over the homosexuals or the liberals, then why isn't it the homosexuals and liberals that suffer from the disasters? And I'm talking about things like the Gulf oil spill, the spill the other day off the Texas coast, which hasn't got a whole lot of airplay, as you may have noticed.
Nope, yeah.
And, you know, it seems to be coming to the red states instead of the so-called liberal states. But no one seems to make note of this, and look at these pastors and what they're saying, and realize it for what it is, total BS.
Well, I remember back when the BP Horizon disaster was unfolding, and I made the observation then that those weren't just tar balls rolling up on the beach.
Nope.
That was actually conservatism that was fouling that beautiful coastline.
Yep.
Because that's why these things are happening in so-called red states, Kevin, because red states, in order to be friendly to business, have set in motion the forces that make these things happen. And by the forces that make these things happen, I don't mean some imaginary juvenile delinquent with a white beard and sandals in the sky.
No. Cause and effect. If you do this, this is going to happen. And we've seen it time and time again. And it just... why people can't make that connection? I talked to some family last night, and they were joking. It was 40-something in Florida, Central Florida, yesterday morning. And they were made a joke about, well, that must be that global warming, which I don't even bother to respond to anymore. It's pointless. But can't people make the connection that it's not just global warming, it's global climate change, and if it's hot somewhere, it's going to be cold somewhere else, you know? And it's not unheard of, but it is unusual for it to be that low a temperature in Central Florida this late in the season. And yet, nothing said of it, you know? It just is, it's just one of those weather things that happens every so often, except it's been happening for the last 10 years, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal, that last 10 years part.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's really all I had to say. I just, it upsets me so much when I hear these old-time radio programs and see the amount of indoctrination that people got way back then and had no clue about it. Because back then we trusted our politicians to almost godlike levels. And so whatever a politician told you back then was, pardon the word, but gospel. And so if he said those evil communists over in Russia were the source of all the world's problems, then by God, we had to hate the Russians.
Or even be willing to blow up the whole world just to keep...
Yeah.
Does that just blow your mind when you think about it?
That
we were willing to destroy the entire planet lest communism take over?
Yeah.
I mean, you remember the phrase, better dead than red?
Sure. And I'm not old enough to remember the duck and cover drills in school, but I'm not too far removed from that. And I was alive during the Cuban Missile Crisis. I was only 3 or 4, but I was alive then. And for what a 3-year-old or 4-year-old picked up from the news and what I've seen through the history books, it was a scary time. You know,
it absolutely rocked my world when I considered, and it hadn't dawned on me until recently, my mother was carrying me as the Cuban Missile Crisis unfolded.
Yeah.
She was pregnant with me. And just to sit there and think about any woman about to bring another life into the world with that going on in that moment, what things must have passed through her mind?
Probably as close to the things that pass through my mind these days, because I want nothing to do with a child in this, the way the world is today, maybe for different reasons. Maybe I think it's more these days because of the growing conservatism in our own country that seems to call anything and everything evil except for what they don't call evil, you know.
Right, and just like Jennifer Stefano, they get to do all the declaring of what is and isn't.
Exactly.
I mean, is it just me, Kevin, or is that pretty nervy for that woman to presume to speak for every
total, like you called it, a lie, you know? And it would infuriate me if I were a mother and my children didn't have insurance up until now, and they were finally able to get some sort of insurance coverage, for this woman to be on the air saying, well,
but I mean, it seems like it seems like if the ancient Greeks were right about things, that would be what you would call hubris.
Oh yeah.
And it would be deserving of some metaphysical punishment. Now, I'm not suggesting that Jennifer Stefano step off stage and take her brooches and gouge out her own eyes with them, but really, I mean, that's hubris.
Say the least, it's something more than hubris, and that 14% comment really got to me. That's a large number. 6 million people signed up. I can't do the quick math, but...
And she's pissed off about it.
6 million people is 10% of 600,000, so somewhere around 800,000 people didn't have insurance, now do.
See, and that's part of what I... Part of what I don't understand about that whole segment, Kevin, is, well, I do understand because Chris Hayes is genial and decent and intelligent and poised. Because at some point, you just look, why not just look at her and say, okay, we haven't established much here, but we have established that you're an idiot. Goodbye.
Yep.
And just kill the monitor.
Well, I think there was one more reason that you didn't mention why he allowed her to do that. He's got corporate masters. Very simple.
No. That's not what I'm getting at. I think it has.
I know. I understand.
Those programs are not free form. Like, I mean, they are scripted to the second.
Oh, sure.
So if he had ditched her, then there would have been time to fill when, you know, maybe not any backup or what have you. This is... What I fundamentally don't understand is giving that woman airtime. I don't want to suppress her speech, but then again, I'm not the government, so I can suppress till hell freezes over as long as I don't as long as I don't break the law doing it.
Well, it wasn't even so much a matter of suppressing her speech; it was the fact she was trying to suppress his, and he was allowing that to go on to some extent before he finally put his foot down and said, no, I'm going to get this question in here and you're going to answer it. But she still didn't. And at that point where she's trying to overtalk you and she won't answer your question, I'm like you. Why bother? You know, and why bother inviting her back? If I have to admit, if I hear two sides of an argument, and both are congenial, well thought out arguments, I don't particularly care, conservative, liberal, I'll listen to it. But we've seen for the last 10, 15 years, if not longer, anytime a liberal starts speaking out, the conservative invariably tries to overtalk them. And it's just a modus operandi now by them. You've come to expect it. And that's what I mean about indoctrination. We've come to expect it. And
I think you're largely correct. By the way, just sort of to add to the flavor of this conversation, just got a tweet from Fritz. And Fritz tells us that the barber who cut his hair as a child had stickers on his mirror in the barbershop. One of them, of course, was Better Dead Than Red, and the other was Wallace for President.
Yep.
I mean, there is a continuum down which this right-wing sewer flows.
And where will that end, though, is my greatest fear.
Well, it will only end when they have taken over, too. I mean, everybody thought the John Birch Society had become sort of a gag.
Yep.
And then it suddenly, all it took was a little bit of money, and bang, the moribund old John Birch Society re-blossoms like one of those plants that only blooms every 50 years and smells like a corpse.
Yep.
And bang, there it is, the Tea Party.
Yep.
Because the John Birch Society really is just a rebranded Tea Party, or a Tea Party is just a rebranded John Birch Society.
Sure.
It's the same old gang of cranks. Yep. Keep your government hands off my Medicare.
Oh, and that's frustrating for me, too, because when I hear someone say that, I don't even bother responding to it anymore, Bob, because I feel like it's pointless. Why waste my breath on someone that stupid? You know,
right.
Keep your government hands off my Medicare. I'm grateful for the Medicare I got, thank you very much, and I'm very glad the government is managing it. It beats the corporations managing it to the extent that they're not. That Medicare summary statement I get every month isn't from the government. It's from a corporation. So, you know, but nonetheless, for what the government does manage of it, I'm very grateful that they do. And I don't think all government is bad. I think government serves a function, and what most people forget is that government is of, for, and by the people. And so when you hear people complain about the government, aren't they really just complaining about themselves? You know? And
yeah.
That's what a great deal of these teabaggers do. So. But anyway.
It's, you know, you pay your nickel, you take the ride.
Yeah, well, I would like to get off this ride, and I'm waiting for that karma to catch up with some of these people, because I'm, you know, just like this thing.
Well, sure, and there's so much of it out there. I mean, we had the story the other day of that war criminal, that man who should be sharing a cot with George Bush and Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell and Dick Cheney and that whole crowd in a prison somewhere following a war crimes trial in The Hague. Don Rumsfeld, I'm sure, did you see this? Compared President Obama to a trained ape the other day.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
A trained ape.
Well, it was no...
I guess he must read that Belgian newspaper that published the pictures of Barack and Michelle Obama photoshopped into ape, you know, chimpanzee faces.
Yep.
Oh, I'll bet you former dim leader just that's a funny one.
Well, it was just as much an accident as that dark days of segregation comment was, or press release.
Oh, Jesus, that one just knocked me down.
And as far as the indoctrination in school.
I mean, really? Dark day? Why couldn't they be vile days or hate-filled days or miserable days or shameful days? But no, 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 no. Let one of these little teabagging religion industry asshats get hold of it, and it's the dark days of segregation.
And I bet the person that thought that lineup got a raise. You know, I
just, you've got to make me cry.
So, you know.
I know, I know. Kevin, it's good to hear from you, my friend.
Good to talk to you, Bob, and good to hear from the Horn family and listen to y'all.
All right. Take care.
Great to be on the phones again, too, by the way.
We're hoping the healing hands of faith continue to hold out here.
Yeah. Well, just...
In fact, I got my... just today, I received the flash memory card that I have to... So this weekend, I'll be... pulling the phone unit offline again and going in and changing it out and putting it back in line. And never a dull moment.
Well, best of luck to you.
Yeah, I'll take all I can get. Kevin, have a good evening.
All right, take care, Bob.
Bye now. Bye-bye. Our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. And thanks going out to Robert. Thank you very, very much. Robert just straight up answered Mark's contribution to finish off fundraising for this evening. Thank you so, so much, Robert. Thank you. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir.
What's happening, Bill?
If I knew that, I'd be there.
Ain't that the truth?
I was knocked off of a show by some guy calling me, and I had to talk to him, and blah, blah. So I heard this start out. Why does that woman's name ring a bell with me somewhere? Am I psychotic or?
Jennifer Stefano?
Yeah.
Well, she's with the Pennsylvania chapter of Americans for Prosperity.
Okay, well, I mean, I thought her... Somehow or other, that name rings a bell with me in the broadcasting in some way, shape, or form. But I guess, you know, I was around that stuff too long ago. I heard this right-wing stuff. In fact, there's a guy that played nose tackle for the Cleveland Browns, had his show out of Akron, and you can't get enough guns for this guy. One of those people, you know.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, just what we always wanted. I mean, I just don't know what do they want from this country. I mean, as I say, am I crazy, or do you think Alexander Hamilton will be having a shit hemorrhage watching this work go overseas?
Well said, Bill.
His thing was make it here and spread the prosperity in your own country, because that way there's more to steal.
Yeah, well, you know what? You know what's kind of interesting, though? You seldom see, if ever, Alexander Hamilton compared compared to Che Guevara. But the fact of the matter is, they both had the same argument. They both wanted to establish industry in their countries so as to not be so reliant upon foreign imports, and to be able to diversify away from agrarian economics. That was one of the things that pissed off Che after the Cuban Revolution. He wanted to see industrialism come to Cuba, whereas the Russians wanted a client state that would take their goods in exchange for farm goods from Cuba.
I don't know if you, Guevara was, I saw his picture a lot in the 60s. He was a popular guy with certain quarters in this country. And I was never really one of them. I had a feeling about, because I was falling back on what I knew about Mr. Stalin, who was, leader of the communist bloc.
Yes.
And that, I remember Red Skelton doing a joke about Stalin, because they replay some of his stuff, and Stalin was apologizing for giving the world 3 days to get out. But they could lean heavily. They couldn't have put up, the capitalists couldn't have put up a bigger villain than Uncle Joe.
Oh, no. And just by way of trivia, this may be where you were thinking you'd heard of Jennifer Stefano from. Maybe you were unintentionally confusing her with Gwen Stefani.
Yeah, it could have been.
My
memory is giving me
fits. The singer.
Now,
yeah. Did you ever spend much time reading Pogo, the comic strip?
I had an uncle who loved it, but I couldn't grab it. I didn't grasp it. It was something wrong with me. I was more of an addicted to a little strip that by a guy named Jimmy Hatlow that was called "They'll Do It Every Time," because it pointed out human nature. Like when you're applying for a job and the guy that's doing the hiring, the personnel manager, he's telling you about the great people you're going to work with. And in the other cartoon block, it was a bunch of people throwing paper airplanes around and doing other stupid things in the office. In other words, he'd give you the BS on one side and sometimes the reality on the other. It's like he had a thing that anybody could throw his gum on the sidewalk. He had a thing called Hatlow's Inferno, which was a type of hell. People would throw gum on the sidewalk or sentenced to an eternity of walking through a sidewalk made of gum. That was the punch there. And he'd have a cartoon. And I don't know, but Pogo, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to point out that Walt Kelly took aim at Stalin and Castro and... No, it wasn't Stalin. It was Khrushchev and Castro and one other, and portrayed them as three... But it was hilarious. And then they were members of the Jack Acid Society.
Shit.
And it was, those words were printed in newspapers all across the country. It was the J-A-C-K-A-C-I-D Society, the Jack Acid Society. And they may have been, he may have portrayed them as jackasses.
Well, I don't know if you ever read the Our Man in Havana by Graham Greene. I saw the movie with...
A long time ago I did, and in fact, I looked at repurchasing the book not too long back.
Yeah, I just went through it a couple of years ago, and Graham Greene has written a lot of different stuff. Didn't he write The Third Man also?
Yes.
That movie gave me the willies when I'm, first of all, the zither as a somehow it had a sound that dug deep into my guts. And I guess it's that Middle European in me being hacked at. You know, the genes, Bob. You know, yeah. You can't get away from it.
Not hardly.
Things hit you. Well, I won't even talk to you about banjos and bluegrass, will I? Well, I love bluegrass. I also love New Orleans jazz. And the reason is your ears had to be able to really to enjoy both types of music. You had to be able to hear three things or more at once. And I guess that music gene is one of the few things my old man ever gave me in life was the talent that he had. He passed it along, and of course I desecrated it by playing. I'd bring over blues albums to my dad's house and say, "How can you listen to that primitive stuff?" And he preferred Goodman, and they loved Al Hurt. And Hurt was a great trumpet player, but I didn't get the feel out of Hurt. Well, nobody got the feel that Louis had it all, man.
Yeah.
Louis Armstrong had everything. Plus, Louis liked to smoke a lot of vegetation in his life.
No small amount.
Yeah. Well, how many people in my generation, my barber, female barber, still comes over when I need a haircut, which I can stand pretty soon. And she'll break one out, and I had to tell her. I said, people in this apartment know what the hell that stuff smells like. Hell, what were the names? Gage? Beside grass, a reefer was Gage, and there was a couple other. What the hell, when I first bought that stuff,
tea.
I would buy
the tea. You know, when you go back to Jack Kerouac's On the Road, which he wrote in the late 40s, it's referred to as tea, T-E-A.
Oh, yeah, tea was another Texas tea was what I heard it called. You're right. I dumped a bag of it on my dresser one night, and my mother found it, and I thought she was going to beat me to death. I was like 21, you know. Oh, God. It's one of those things that, it was a crazy time to be alive as the wheel was turning in the society we thought was changing for the better.
Oh, I just looked it up, and just to square it away, I was getting things a little bit conflated. On the one hand, Walt Kelly created the Jack Acid Society to mock the John Birchers.
Yeah. Okay. That's what he was doing with it.
Yeah.
Because now it makes sense when the satirist from him was coming out full blast. Those guys used to come over to this church-run coffee house and face an audience of, leftist, young leftists, and they'd smoke that shit, and we'd go after them, and they'd walk out disgusted. Did you give me, there was a group of engineers, Technocracy, you ever hear of them?
No.
Yeah, that was a bunch of engineers that felt that engineers could run the world better than politicians. But then again, Bob, they had a certain point there. I could probably go down to McDonald's and find a staff that could run the country better than some of these people. That's what bothers me. It's just the plain stupidity. And there's a new book out praising the Dulles brothers. Are you, pardon me, I almost said the wrong thing. Are you kidding me? Those guys?
Princes. Absolute princes.
Yeah. Yeah, these people spout this crap. And Obama, I'm disappointed with the man. But I'm still happy to have been able to. Two words.
Mitt Romney. Still disappointed?
Oh, exactly. And George Romney would have been a better choice. You're familiar with the fact that his father went to Vietnam, and he was leading the Republican polls.
Oh, and of course, by the way,
came back and gave a speech.
Backing up just
the military, his lion.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, he disappeared from the polls immediately. Sometimes I'm paranoid enough to think that what do you do to fight money and stupidity? Stupidity on the part of the working classes in a lot of cases, and big money that keeps winding them up. Fox News. I mean, I could never. O'Reilly. I can't stand the man. And another punk with a hairdo. I like the
You mean the life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity?
Yeah, Hannity.
The Hannity job.
Were around, and I didn't discover them until later on because I never bothered to watch that stuff. I mean, hell, the news guys when I was a kid were Douglas Edwards and John Cameron and Swayze, and you know.
Right.
And they were just news readers, but Huntley and Brinkley, but they came off better than what Fox used. Is the society dumbing down?
So does a test pattern, Bill.
Yeah. Well, I remember my sister being a violinist. The morning test pattern would run, which ran every day, by the way, until about 7 o'clock. It would give her a great A to tune her violin. That was the note that was coming through the...
Oh, that's funny.
...television set.
That tone was an A?
Yeah, I think it was A.
I wonder if it was a 440. I wonder if it was a 440A.
It could have been, because, well, you know, that's harmonicas. The marine bands and that were A440 pitched. That's the other thing. The guy wants me to appear on television, and he wants me to play. And, Bob, it's a horrible thing, but I don't miss not playing. You know, you stand there night after night for 4 hours, emptying your guts.
Oh, God, it's hard work.
Yeah. Oh, God, was it hard work. Well, when you were a smoker, it was extremely hard work. But, hell, they ran me through a vocal cord test at age 32 because of the changes in the cords that you get when you're singing over people that have PA systems in the early days were just junk compared to what they are today. And what was a monitor? Well, it was a ship that fought a Confederate ship, but, you know, or somebody in the classroom hallway, but you could hardly hear yourself sing most of the time. It was, it had its fun spots, and I'm sure you...
You know, it's interesting you mention that, because I was showing, I forget what the motivation was, but I was showing Ferg footage of the 1965 Beatles concert at Shea Stadium. And, of course, the Vox people had built them especially for the tour because it was going to be in these huge stadium venues.
Yep.
They built them special 100-watt Vox amps. And they couldn't...
100 watts, do you?
Yeah, 100 watts for Shea Stadium. Filled the capacity with screaming people. So that, but it obviously didn't cut the mustard. So they patched the output into the PA system of Shea Stadium.
He had to, yeah.
Which just turned it into a complete sonic disaster. But I was...
I used a Fender Deluxe, which is a small Fender, and it's got a great tone. But I also used a damn thing on the front end of that that you could dial in different amp tones. I forget what it was called. I still have it. And so that was a toy that was available to us. And then I would come out of the back end of that Fender, out of the extension speaker, into what they called a DI, or direct box.
Yeah.
That would drop the thing so you could plug it directly into a PA without a mic. If you put a mic in front of a PA or in front of an amplifier, you're just asking for feedback. Just asking for trouble.
Sure.
I learned about the direct use of the direct box from some guy out of Boston, Magic Dick. He was a hell of a player, you know.
But you know, in that the reason you were talking, the reason I mentioned the Beatles business is because you were talking about how bad the monitoring was in the situation you were describing. They couldn't hear anything at all. Their monitors were next to useless.
And those guys were singing a lot of harmonies, and that had to be a SOB.
Well, it got so frustrating that toward the end, John Lennon played the keyboards with his elbows. They just kind of gave. It was only a 30-minute set, and they just said, "Oh, screw this."
Yeah.
And when they put out a recording, they had to actually go back into the studio and overdub it.
Yeah.
So
families are funny too. Jerry Lee Lewis, he has a cousin that's a piano player and a singer. What the
yeah, name? Mickey Gilley.
Mickey Gilley, and then there's another one who I believe is...
Oh, Jimmy Swaggart.
Jimmy Swaggart. There's a family, huh? Because, of course, Jerry Lee, he hurt his career in rock and roll by marrying a young cousin of his.
The 12-year-old, was she?
Yeah, that's kind of not well thought of. Well, I had a situation when I was playing this one joint where these two girls were pushing their sister at me, and I ended up with her, and I found out a day or two later the kid was 16. Well, hell, I was only 37, Bob. What the hell did I want?
Has the statute run on this, Bill?
What?
Has the statute of limitations run on this?
Oh, yeah, thank God, because the last time I saw the woman, her mother lived on the same street I did in Lake County. There's another coincidence. And she'd stop by at night. My wife and I were separated, and she'd stop by and sit with me, and she was astounded. She said, "You haven't laid a hand on me." I said, I shouldn't have when I did. You know, because I had finally grown up, Bob, to a point where I could, where things change. And because it had to be hell on earth for you as a young radio guy when you were single.
Yeah, that was hell.
Yeah. Well, you got yourself one hell of a wife. The only problem I have with your phones working so good and you being in the studio, because Agnes is one hell of a human being to talk with.
Oh, she is a telephone conversationalist par excellence.
Well, I guess that when as isolated as, how isolated are you from friends and family up there?
Don't have much family left except my own. I've got one sister who doesn't speak, who is 500 miles away, and one sister who is 700 miles away, and I got some cousins about 8 hours away.
Yeah, well, that's another piece of post-war sociology, the spread of families all over the country.
Well, and if you get hold of Joe Bajant's Rainbow Pie, he'll tell you that it was by design, that it was deliberate, that in order to maintain the post-war economic boom, because so often economic collapse comes after a huge war effort. That the post-war permanent consumer culture model required extended families to be broken up and scattered all over the United States, which was done with real efficiency.
Yeah, because they're always telling us about what the breakup of the family means to the means to the society.
And these are the bastards that broke it, Bill.
Yeah, and they're the ones who encouraged it. Yeah, that's the constant and chronic thing that hits me is the irony of the people's behavior, the leader's so-called leadership class. By the way, would you spell Bajant for me?
B-A-G-E-A-N-T.
Thank you, because I had his stuff, and I like to keep getting stuff until I, and the library taped Fletcher Pratt's Short History of the Civil War. I'm supposed to get it back this week, because now I would, because that damn book, you keep going over that thing, and any good history book, you keep picking stuff up unbelievably. It just keeps pouring out at you. And my problem is I've become so cynical that I don't know anymore whether I should even bother. Well, I suppose a lot of people are saying, yeah, why do you bother to call, you moron?
Oh, by the way, Irish Dave wants you to know that for all your transgressions you just previously mentioned, including the one for which the statute of limitations is run, Irish Dave wants you to know that God forgives you.
Yeah, well, thank you. tell God I appreciate it. Wait, when you see him, Bob?
And Irish Dave will, too. He also pointed out, fun fact 2.0, both Che Guevara and Alexander Hamilton were born in other countries, or born in countries other than the places where they made their revolutionary bones.
Yeah, was Hamilton Irish or Scotch?
I don't know. I mean, we know he was a bastard.
Well, was he born in the islands?
He was born in the Caribbean.
Okay, it just came back to my sour old brain. You know, I remember that now. Of course, he's popular with American people,
Oh, sure.
He has 10 times the value of Washington. Or, so to speak. Oh, God.
He was born in Charlestown on the island of Nevis in the Leeward Islands of the British West Indies.
Yeah, because there was a series of books called the Real
Book. And here's your heritage. He was born out of wedlock to Rachel Fossette, a married woman of partial French Huguenot descent, and James A. Hamilton, the fourth son of the Scottish Laird Alexander Hamilton of Grange, Ayrshire. And after he was born there on Nevis, he and his mother moved to St. Croix in the Virgin Islands, which were then under Danish control.
They were all, St. Croix was Danish?
At one point, yes.
How the hell did she?
Just like St. Martin is still Dutch.
Well, I know how they got it.
Because that's M-A-A, that's M-A-A-R-T-E-N, Martin.
Yeah, the Dutch were sailors, were they not?
They did get around.
Weren't there a lot of Dutch explorers and warmongers going around the world?
No small amount, yes.
Well, didn't the Dutch fight a nice war against the Spanish?
Yes, that was the war of the... yes.
Yeah. Because it's hard to keep track of why these people fight each other. What I say, when Bismarck was trying to unite Germany around the Prussian king, he picked a war. He took some land from little Denmark, and then he picked a war with the Austrians that my great-grandfather fought in that one, and that's when my great-grandfather immigrated here. He said, enough is enough, because they were gearing up for that 1870 mess with the French. You know, this is how they united these countries a lot of times. And my problem with the whole Ukrainian thing is they have been a big part of the Russian nation, whether it was Tsarist or communist. They were a big part. And of course, I think when I look at Western Europe, I think
at one time, way, way back, Kiev was actually the capital of the state of Rus, R-U-S.
Yep. Well, you hit it right on the head. The European money men and the states money men, they want to get in there and do what they did to Greece and Romania.
Spain, Italy, Portugal, Ireland.
Yeah. What did they do? Get in there and they destroyed the monetary system or what?
Well, they demand that the social safety net be destroyed. They destroy social welfare programs. They jack up prices, and all in the name of loaning some money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they call it a bailout.
Well, I hope Betsy doesn't get upset, but there's been a big prejudice remark against two brothers who happen to be of Jewish background. Who were they, Bob, in Europe? They were the money men who provided the cash for these wars and these rich people.
What, the Rothschilds?
Rothschilds, yeah. I think that's a bunch of crap, you know?
Well, I don't like that whole... I'm certainly not in love with the Wall Street bankers. But to associate some sort of religious or heritage or race-based—I even hate the word race—prejudice. People with money do terrible things because they like money, not because of the makeup of their genetics.
Not because of anything else. I mean, that's what's so ridiculous is, because I heard a lot of shit when I was a kid that I've since been able to shake out of my addled brain. You know, it's you can't buy this stuff. I mean, the truth of the matter is, according to what I've heard, it was illegal for a Christian to loan the money.
Right, because Jesus, that's one of those things that Jesus actually does mention, as opposed to things like the gay. Jesus does talk about lending money at interest. It's called usury, and he says, don't do it or you'll burn in hell.
Yeah, he does talk about it. 'Cause that was a common thing in every nation on Earth, and it certainly wasn't one group of people.
Well, no, but if you take a group of people and you say, listen, you are here at our sufferance. We're not going to let you own property, and we're not going to let you have citizenship, and we're not going to let you be merchants.
Yeah.
Well, you don't leave much except, but lo and behold, hey, guys, wait a minute. Now, we're good Christians, so we can't loan money at interest, but you're not. Why don't y'all do it?
We'll let you front the thing for us.
Right.
Because that front stuff is...
And then, as an added bonus, when periodically the nation state would go insane with bigotry and hate, then they would just seize everything and look at the mass exodus of Spanish Jewry under the reign of Ferdinand and Isabella.
Isn't that where the Jesuits originated?
There used to be, and you may appreciate this. I remember a good buddy of mine who was raised very well Catholic, telling me an old joke about a Benedictine and a Jesuit sitting around.
Yeah.
And comparing notes, and the Benedictine says, "Well, you know, we were constituted to." Wipe out the Albigensian heresy. How about you? And the Jesuit says, well, Ignatius Loyola founded our order to combat the Protestant heresy. And the Benedictine looks at him and says, or maybe it's a Dominican, I can't remember. He says, you know what the difference of us between us is? The Jesuit says, what? He says, you don't see any Albigensians, do you?
Yeah, they were a big heresy. I mean, I used to know a little bit. There were some heresies that sprung up early in the Christian church. They had a different council to try to...
Arianism was the...
That's one.
The bete noire of the early church, and they never managed to rub it out. I mean, Arianism is still banging around inside a bunch of Protestant sects.
And the whole thing is based on this guy you talk about, the old man in the sky stuff, you know, that you use a lot. Because there's still people who... Oh, man, one of my favorite lines is that one of the biggest hypocrites in the world is an undertaker trying to look sad at a $20,000 funeral. I thought you'd like that one. Because they're just, you know...
I'll tell you what, speaking of, well, it's not really along the same lines, but I ran across, and I don't often say this about articles over there, but I ran across an absolutely wonderful article at Salon, and what it is it's an excerpt of a book that has been published, which I feel compelled to get my hands on. The name of the book is The Bohemians, Mark Twain and the San Francisco Writers Who Reinvented American Literature. It's an excerpt from that book, and it's about, essentially, the article is how Mark Twain became Mark Twain, the amazing story of the lectures that made him a superstar.
Yeah, somebody was doing reenactments of that, some Hollywood guy, and he was great.
Val Kilmer. I saw him interviewed on...
The modern era, this guy was older. This was 50s, 60s, 70s kind of.
Yeah, it's left my brain.
Because he'd get in the full contrary, you know, a full costume with him.
Well, Kilmer does, too. Kilmer does, too, and he does a magnificent job. But the thing I loved, the poster, so what Twain did is after he'd been to Hawaii and come back, and, of course, he was always broke. You know, it's almost like he was a musician. He was always broke, so he figured he would set up a lecture series and try to entertain people for an hour and make some money at that. So this is the poster, and this is so Twain, and it's so brilliant. I mean, I'm past being a fan. I'm like a Twain worshiper or something. This is the first Playbill poster for his very first ever lecture. all bold characters, a splendid orchestra, and then in regular type, is in town but has not been engaged. Boldface, also a den of ferocious wild beasts, back to regular typeface, will be on exhibition in the next block. Boldface again, magnificent fireworks, regular type again. We're in contemplation for this occasion, but the idea has been abandoned. Boldface again, a grand torchlight procession, regular typeface again. May be expected. In fact, the public are privileged to expect whatever they please. The doors opened at 7, the trouble to begin at 8 o'clock. I love that.
Well, you just get another name that comes to mind with me is P.T. Barnum was a model for American entertainment business.
Well, he was a model for American capitalism.
That's for sure.
Oh, Hal Holbrook. Hal Holbrook.
Hal Holbrook, yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Horst. Our buddy Horst coming through with
Horst,
that.
Horst, he's on it. What is Horst living out of the country?
Horst is in Taiwan.
In where?
Taiwan.
Oh.
You know, Taiwan on?
Oh, you mean the place that we were going to defend with the 7th Fleet? The Chinese tried to take it because that crook, Chiang Kai-shek, hadn't schemed enough money out of this country yet. Well, it's a shame you can't find a few guys like I ran into in my ute who flew the hump from India to China, just delivering tons of stuff that Chiang Kai-shek could steal. And you know, her brothers, Madam Chiang?
Yes.
Her brothers were
pure as the driven slush.
Yeah, they were in the money markets. So, you take it one step farther. Let's put somebody else on here. I've shot my mouth enough tonight. You take.
Well, it's good to hear. It's good to hear from you, Bill. Stay warm, and we will talk soon.
Well, I'm going to reheat some of that. The woman threw my spaghetti. She didn't serve. She threw it in plastic bags, and I'm letting it sit in some water, and then I'm going
to. Yeah, that's really handy. I love to do it that way. Just take the leftover pasta, keep it moist, put it in a plastic bag, put it in the fridge, and you just put it in.
Well, I was very lucky, Bob. My mother had married an Italian guy before she got a divorce and married my old man. So there's good food in the family because my grandmother, who left Breslau in the 1890s, Loudon and, Bob, I believe it or not, I'm waiting to get a new cutter so I can make potato pancakes and I miss the hell out of them.
You mean the shredded, grated kind?
Yep. Well, you said that was my job as a kid. Grate the potatoes and add a little meat here and there. And
I've never had them with meat in them.
Yeah, my mother was making that following. And the recipe my cousin sent me was my grandmother's way of doing it. And I was doing it, but they threw out my food cutter because it was too old. Well, so am I. Stay away from me, please. You take care of yourself.
All right, Bill, you take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, two of my favorite things in the world, potato pancakes and cabbage rolls. And the way I was taught to make potato pancakes is just shredded potato and shredded onion, or not shredded, but grated to a pulp, with a beaten egg mixed in and some salt and maybe some pepper. And a little bit of flour just to hold it all together, and then just ladle that thin batter into the hot fat, and the thinner the better, because then you get those lovely lace edges and sour cream and applesauce, and whoa, man. And there is nowhere around here for me to get it. Well, there's IHOP, but I found with the IHOP in Beckley that that the food there often comes with complimentary hair. So, let's see. Where to go here? We've been hearing all these hissies out there over the Noah movie. Radio Rwanda types complaining that it's not historically accurate. Which I just love because there's nothing historic about Noah in the first place. If Noah is historic, so too is the Easter Bunny. But apparently all the criticism has finally stepped on Russell Crowe's last nerve, which is not something one is well advised to do. He's pissed off about all these fundies who are talking about how they're abusing the Bible. And apparently Paramount has given up on the notion of trying to market Noah to the fundy crowd, because, you know, they got a lot of money, and sometimes they can be pretty easily separated from it. But, the movie is being banned across big chunks of the Middle East and parts of North Africa because Noah is considered to be a prophet. No, really. And is there anybody out there that thinks that there really was a historic Noah? Please tell me there isn't, at least not within the Horn family commune. I don't think I could take it. But the talk of the historic Noah, the hysteric Noah, Russell Crowe showed up on Good Morning America and said, "We've had probably over a year now of very harsh criticism from a bunch of people who have put their name and stamp on an opinion that's not even based on the movie or seeing the movie, just an assumption of what it could be or how bad it could be or how wrong it could be in their eyes, which I think, quite frankly, is bordering on absolute stupidity, because now I think people are seeing the movie and they're realizing how respectful it is and how potent it is." I call bullshit. Not because it's not true to the Bible or true to history, but because the story itself, unless we're going to try to tease out some sort of meta message, is just bronze. It's just Bronze Age fabrication. It's the stuff you tell around the fire after you've gotten done eating whatever it was that the jackals and the buzzards didn't want. But in point of fact, Noah is plagiarism, okay? Noah, the Noah story is a Bogart job. It was Bogarted off of the Epic of Gilgamesh. Now, you might recall that, for instance, several generations later, we're told in Genesis that Abram picked up his old daddy and carried him out of Ur of the Chaldees. And, of course, that Ur was one of the brilliant Mesopotamian civilizations. It was probably too civilized for Abram. Things got hot, or the bill collectors, or what have you. And so he takes off wandering. So he probably, if he was a historic figure, he probably took with him some of the cultural traditions of Ur, which might very well include the Epic of Gilgamesh. One of the first, and the great written-down hero stories. Gilgamesh spoke to Ut-Napishtim, the far away. "I have been looking at you, but your appearance is not strange. You are like me. You yourself are not different. You are like me. My mind is resolved to fight with you, but instead, my arm lies useless over you. Tell me, how is it that you stand in the assembly of the gods and have found life?" Ut-Napishtim spoke to Gilgamesh, saying, "I will reveal to you, Gilgamesh, a thing that is hidden, a secret of the gods I will tell you. Surupak, a city that you surely know, situated on the banks of the Euphrates, that city was very old, and there were gods inside it. The hearts of the great gods moved them to inflict the flood. Their father Anu uttered the oath. Valiant Enlil was their advisor. Ninurta was their chamberlain. Enugi was their minister of canals. Ea, the prince, was under oath with them. So he repeated their talk to the reed house. Reed house, reed house. Wall, wall. O man of Shurupak, son of Ubar Tutu. Tear down the house and build a boat. Abandon wealth and seek living beings. Spurn possessions and keep alive living beings. Make the seed of all living beings go up into the boat which you are to build. Its dimensions must measure equal to each other. Its length must correspond to its width. Roof it over like the apsu. That's the word for the firmament in the primordial waters. I understood and spoke to my lord Ea, my lord. Thus is the command which you have uttered. I will heed and will do it. But what shall I answer the city, the populace, and the elders? Ea spoke, commanding me, his servant. You, well then, this is what you must say to them. It appears that Enlil is rejecting me, so I cannot reside in your city, nor set foot on Enlil's earth. I will go down to the Apsu to live with my lord Ea, and upon you he will rain down abundance, a profusion of fowl, myriad fishes. He will bring to you a harvest of wealth. In the morning he will let loaves of bread shower down. What? Like manna from heaven? Man, there's not an original thought in that book, is there? And in the morning he will let loaves of bread shower down, and in the evening a rain of wheat. Just as dawn began to glow, the people assembled around me. The carpenter carried his hatchet. The reed worker carried his flattening stone. It's where the Noah story comes from. So, if you know any fundies who happen, that Noah movie is heretical, it's blasphemous, you would do well to say, shut up, it's not even an original story, they stole it from the Epic of Gilgamesh, because there's not 10 cents worth of originality in that entire book. It's a ripoff. And then you might have to run. Going back to a previous comment, Bob writing in, Jesus pooped? I believe that Jesus must have had to participate in this earthly act, because how else would we have been graced with the term, holy shit! Yeah. Oh, it is but it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and here's one. I ran past this one earlier. Ow! So let's say you've busted your butt to get a right proper technical education at Montana Tech, which is the best technical school in Montana. It has a stellar geology department. Some of the best geologists in the United States got their start at Montana Tech. I don't know what their mascot is. I'm sorry. Well, so you're getting your degree this year, and you've spent 4 years studying science. You've spent 4 years studying things like the age of the Earth, rock strata, the movement of the Titanic plates and whatnot. You're probably in debt up to your eyeballs. And you're just looking forward to graduation and maybe hopefully going out and finding some sort of a job in your chosen career field. Well, lo and behold, it turns out that those who have sat there and busted their butts to study this really, really, really old earth are going to be blessed with a commencement address brought to them by Greg Gianforte, or Gianforte, G-I-A-N-F-O-R-T-E. Who's Greg Gianforte? He's a billionaire. Well, of course. I mean, he's delivering the commencement address, right? But he's not just any billionaire. He's a philanthropic billionaire. He's got lots of money, and he likes to give it out. But here's the joker from the deck. He doesn't like to give the money out to, oh, I don't know. And by the way, he's a Christian. But he doesn't like to give his money out to, say, house the homeless, clothe the naked, or feed the poor, feed the hungry, so much as he likes to give money away for creationist museums. No, really. He is the benefactor behind the 20,000 square foot dinosaur and fossil museum of Glendive, Montana. Oh no. Oh no. It's called the Foundation Advancing Creation Truth, which spells fact. Let's look at some titles. No. Nothing there. Not much in the way of a blog. The mission of the Foundation Advancing Creation Truth and its related ministries is to glorify God as creator and sustainer, emphasize man's accountability to him, and challenge the hearer, visitor, to think through the humanistic concept of evolution. Currently, this is achieved through the fossil digs at Glendive, where fossil excavation of dinosaur bones is done in the context of the flood of Noah's day. The foundation has finished constructing the Glendive Dinosaur and Fossil Museum, which presents the truth of God's Word using the latest in dinosaur and fossil exhibits, paleontological, geological, archaeological, and scientific discoveries. Oh, dear God. Dr. John, I hope you're not still listening. Would you like to donate to the work of fact? Select the button below. No, I'll pass. Thanks. Yeah. Among other things, on that website, they'll tell you, when you visit a natural history museum, you will see wide-eyed children being funneled into an abyss of deception. The so-called curator of the so-called museum gave an interview to the Billings Gazette in which he said, "There's no scientific proof whatsoever that evolution ever took place." And in this particular museum, visitors are told that the dinosaur extinction took place, sit down, during the Noah flood of 4,300 years ago. Greg Gianforte, by the way, is a computer scientist. A creationist computer scientist. But you know what? All is not lost here. So this guy's been signed on to be the commencement speaker, even though letting him speak at the commencement of Montana Tech would be like, well, it is the same, a flat earther addressing the Geographic Society. But there is an outcry. Alums, Montanans with functioning brains, all kinds of folks are pointing out the fact that maybe this is not the best idea. To have a weirdo billionaire creationist address the graduating class of 2014 at Montana Tech. And the article I'm looking at here from Salon says the objectors are not only upset about Gianforte, but about the inclusion of his wife Susan in the program. And I don't think they're objecting because they think that she should be quiet in church. She was invited to co-deliver the commencement speech with her husband. She's a vociferous opponent of laws designed to protect gay people from being targets of discrimination. Oh, these two are a real 1-2 punch. They're a double threat. He'll handle the creationism, and she can handle the homophobic bigotry. She's one of these libertarian asses who believes that business should have the legal right to refuse service to gay customers. and she's been fulminating over the fact that the city council of Bozeman, Montana, is considering an ordinance that would prohibit discrimination against gay people. After the outcry, the billionaire has been told not to bring up this dumbass creationism during his commencement address. So what will it be then? How you can get rich and stupid like me? Jeeves. Irish Dave wondering, maybe they could get Ted Nugent as a replacement. I can't stand the thought. Yeah. Hang on here. I got to see what's going on. Tweet coming in from Isaac. He tells me Montana Tech is a college. Okay. Become an ore digger. Is that their nickname? The Montana Tech Ore Diggers? The Fighting Ore Diggers of Montana Tech? Oh, well. Jeebus. Let's go to the Skype line. Devin is joining us. Hey, Devin.
Hey, you're killing me.
Well, I'm not. I'm sorry, I think. I don't know.
I think maybe they're orcs.
Ooh. Maybe that's it. Yeah. And or maybe what? Maybe the fighting Balrogs of Montana Tech. And maybe they'll have a basketball player who doesn't like to pass the ball and always insists on shooting, and he could be the ball hog of the Balrogs.
Yeah, this billionaire, he needs to go back to Mordor.
Yeah. Jesus. A pit of deception because dinosaurs. The dinosaur extinction of 4,300 years ago. And, of course, every time I see that little bit of stupidity, I am compelled, Devin, almost, to run off and grab the Bill Hicks clip where he says, "And lo, one day, as they were walking down the road, Jesus did come upon a dinosaur with a thorn in its paw, and the apostles did run away yelling, 'Holy shit, Lord, that's a mighty big dinosaur.'" Because bear in mind, Jesus is just 2,000, dinosaurs in the flood are just 2,300 years before Jesus, according to this clown. How can this guy, how can this guy have founded a computer company? How can... What is it that he sold off to Oracle? The thing where the thing that allows people with prehensile toes to type on keyboards? God almighty.
All I can say is he has a lizard brain.
Well, maybe that whole evolution thing just didn't work out for him.
I haven't seen a picture of him. Does he look like a sleaze stack?
You know what? He kind of does.
Oh, man.
He looks like one of those. He looks like one of those shaven-headed villains from a creepy like late '80s movie. All you have to do is look him up. His name. And wait. He's got one of those. I can't tell. It almost looks like he's got one of those mustaches that goes across the upper lip and down, and then turns into mutton chops or something. The picture's a little fuzzy, but you can look him up. Greg Gianforte, Gianforte.
I'm scared too.
I don't advise it.
No, but anyways, you were talking about birthdays today, and well, I got a birthday card today. That's it's a big pale alien.
A pale alien?
It's all sparkly, so it must be a Twilight alien is all I can figure out.
Okay, so it's a pale alien, not a Dunkelweizen. Sorry, that's a beer joke. Beer joke. Can't help it.
Yeah, I hope your birthday is out of this world.
Ah. So it's yours?
I don't know if it's going to suck my blood or, I mean, it's just...
But is today your birthday?
But...
Is today your birthday?
Oh, yeah.
Well, happy birthday, Devin. You and the doodle share a birthday.
That's scary.
Yeah, of course, 17 years ago, her birth seemed, well, the births of all of our children seemed auspicious. Margaret was born during the worst ice storm in 50 years. Ferg was born during a Christmas Day snowstorm that dumped 2 feet of snow on us. And Doodle was born during 500-year floods with a comet hanging in the sky. We were subsequently petitioned by the people of the county wherein we resided to please stop having children, as they were afraid that the next one would be accompanied by portents of frogs and locusts and rivers of blood.
What you mean? You would have quads, and they would be the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
No, it only takes one baby, but something happened. Something devastating happened every time one of our children was born.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I got a wonderful birthday present from Gert.
Oh, did you? Governor Earl Ray Tomlin?
Yeah, that socialized medicine.
Oh, yay!
The Medicaid expansion.
You're going to have coverage?
Yes, I have it retroactively from the first of the year.
That's brilliant. That's wonderful. I'm so happy for you.
And, you know, I did the Obamacare site thing. And that never worked out.
So no, it was a complete disaster, wasn't it?
Yes, I went to, West Virginia, or WVN Roads or something like that. I can send you the site. But
no, I know about it. I'm trying to plow through it now, or not now, but, you know, you get the idea.
Yeah. I submitted the application just a few days ago, and the stuff showed up in the mail today.
Wow, that's awesome.
So it doesn't take that long once you get it put in.
Well, I'm gonna go and do it, and hopefully I won't get, you know, screwed over this time.
Yeah, I mean,
because the funny thing is I told my healthcare.gov story on air, and I was told that the thing had been completed. And yet I'm still getting text messages from healthcare.gov saying my application is incomplete. So, yeah, I'm trying through Inroads myself. I'd like to have it. I really would.
Well, surely, I mean, you know, you're eating the ramen, so, you know, surely you would qualify.
I can show them my collection of flavor booster packs.
Yeah, well, although that may be too fancy a ramen, I don't know.
Oh, that's true. I might want to just go with the Nissin or the Maruchan and the, you know, the little plain plastic wrapper.
Yeah, the ones you get in the big case at Sam's for like $2 for 100 of them or something like that.
You know, I noticed that in our grocery store, the Wiggling Pig, that we now have there, and it's a sign of the times. It really is. We have a half of an entire aisle, you know, half of one side of an entire aisle is devoted to various kinds of ramen.
Yep. Yeah,
that says something.
Less chance of people starving to death in the old sense, but we just starve in a different sense.
Well, they've got a really neat thing up at the Wiggling Pig. They've got a 5 for $20 section in their meat case, and it's frozen. I mean, there's frozen stuff and fresh stuff, and like you can get a vacuum sealed package of little tiny hunks of trimmings from ham in the 5 for $20. What else is there? There are frozen meatballs and frozen sausage biscuits and occasionally like brats and Italian sausage, things like that. It's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
I just haven't figured out what I would do with a vacuum sealed 2-pound bag of little hunks of ham choppings.
I don't know. I guess you could put it in jars and can it till you could eat it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, or maybe put it on salads or you know what? You could probably make a pretty mean pot of split pea soup and use it.
Oh, yeah. Put it in your beans.
And I also got a jar the other day of Frog Ranch brand hot and spicy dill pickles. They're sliced, but they're real thick slices. I'm a spicy kind of guy, and I love to chop those up in deviled eggs. Oh, because I like my deviled eggs to sort of bite back. I want my deviled eggs devilish.
Yeah, there earlier I had a nice supper. I had the had an omelet and bacon and potatoes. Now everything was, you know, fried in the bacon grease, so.
Bacon grease. The good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I am shocked that they do not sell jars of bacon grease in the store.
Oh, are you kidding? The store that sold that would be picketed. But you can still get lard.
Well, you know, I don't think it would be picketed in West Virginia.
Oh, not here. But can you imagine a couple of jars of lard in the refrigerator case at, say, you know, whole paycheck? Yeah.
They may actually have it.
Well, we wouldn't know because we don't have one of those here. I don't think there's a Whole Foods anywhere in West Virginia, is there?
I don't think so. I've never seen one.
No.
So I don't know. There's a giant eagle in Morgantown, I think. It's about as close as you get to it.
Let's see. Fritz checking in. We have that in our Piggly Wiggly in town, a Pick 5 meat section, plus some real meat cutters. And that's the other thing. They've got real meat cutters up here. And so when you buy hamburger from them, you know that they ground the hamburger. And they save their pork trimmings all week in, you know, good refrigeration and everything. And whenever they've got enough, they'll run a mess of sausage. And their fresh ground sausage is awesome. You know how when you get packaged sausage and you fry it, it shrinks up to nothing because it's, you know, 37% fat? Well, this stuff stays, yeah. A patty of this sausage they make stays the same size, just about. It's like a really spicy hamburger, and it's delicious.
Yeah, that's like the stuff when I used to raise pigs. We would do the whole hog sausage.
Yes.
And that's the way to do it. In fact, you had to add something to the pan to fry it.
Yeah, just to keep it right. But I tell you what, to use a little bit of that Wiggling Pig sausage, the fresh stuff mixed in with your hamburger in a meatloaf, oh my goodness gracious.
Yeah. I found this interesting seasoning up at the Slop and Slave. They have, a store brand, but it's like in a big container, like a pint of the stuff. And it's some kind of, they call it Creole seasoning. And, it's really good. It's like seasoned salt that doesn't suck.
Is it Tony Sachery's?
No.
Cause I love that brand. Stuff. Oh, it's a store brand. I love Tony Sachery's.
It comes in a container that's like, what the fake Parmesan cheese stuff comes in?
Yeah. Yeah, Tony Sachery's comes in a container like that, too.
Okay. Yeah, this isn't Tony Sachery's. It's made somewhere else. But it's pretty good. It worked really good on those potatoes.
Oh, I bet that is. I use the Tony Sachery stuff. I'm not much of one for drinking. Drinking first thing in the morning, right out of bed. But I at least like to wait till the mail's in. But I've found a brand of Bloody Mary mix that I just adore. It's called Zing Zang. But it's too thick just to drink it straight up. So I cut it with a little extra tomato juice. Pour in a little bit of beef broth and add a few drops of hot sauce and pour it over ice. But what I'll do is I'll rim the glass, kind of like you do with a margarita. I'll rim the glass with Tony Sachery's. And you want to talk about just a flavor explosion. Hello. And a little bit of lemon juice. There always has to be a little lemon juice in there, too. I mean, stuff's practically a meal.
Really been into the Bloody Marys.
Well, I don't like vodka. I mean, vodka tastes like the stuff that they, to me, tastes like something you clean needles with.
Yeah.
It's just,
Well, there's a friend of mine calls it Russian Clorox.
That's good. I like that. To the extent that cheap tequila is Mexican gasoline, bad vodka is Russian Clorox.
Yeah.
But I talk about drinking a lot more than I do, and frankly, but I love that the Bloody Mary cocktail in the morning. It is And you know what? If you find it in your slop and shave, anywhere else for that matter, the stuff is awesome for making the tomato sauce that goes on stuffed peppers. Just wonderful. Just really, really tasty.
Yeah, part of the reason I went with that seasoning that I found, that like regular seasoned salt, I can't eat that because it's got cornstarch in it.
I guess that just stretches the. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, to keep it from caking, I guess, which is
that would be
strange,
my guess,
but. This stuff has, I think, cellulose in it to keep it from caking.
Hmm. Well, I tell you what, we got a couple more blinking lights here, Devin, so I'm going to hit them, but let's talk again soon, okay?
All right.
All right, and, I hope I didn't hurt you too bad. That was pretty – I love getting a good laugh like that. I thank you for that profoundly.
Yeah, you need to post the public service warnings before you do a story like that. It's hazardous. So.
Yeah, you could laugh until
thank you.
You could laugh until things fall off. Take care, Devin.
All right.
Bye now. Devin, a fellow mountaineer. He's got a great laugh. Let's keep it rolling and go back to the lines. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Edward, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I will, on Chris Matthews this afternoon, I watched that absolutely insane woman, Jennifer Stephanos, or whatever her name
really?
Is.
Really? They got her onto another program on MSNBC?
Yes.
Jumping Jehoshaphat.
Well, the cats have all gone in and hidden under the bed because I was kicking the furniture. Oh, my word. Where in the world did they find that freak?
Isn't she just, did she scream at Chris, too?
Yes. He couldn't get a word in edgewise.
Oh, that must be why they hired her.
Probably so. She's a screecher. Anyway, you were talking about sausages and things. We have this wonderful market here in Dallas. It's called Rudolph's. They make their own sausages and wieners and everything, and they're long things where they're all together, you know. How many links do you want? And if you go in and order a cut of meat, they pull it out from the cooler and chop it off right in front of your face.
So you can, if you want one, you can get a ribeye 3 inches thick.
Absolutely. Oh, Lord. Love Rudolph's. Oh, and by the way, I don't like vodka either. I prefer Tanqueray gin with a little bit of vermouth.
You know, I mentioned, Edward, that I just got done reading the Travis McGee series by John D. McDonald. Travis McGee has his cocktail is to put ice in a highball glass, pour in a little bit of sherry, if you can imagine, swirl that around, strain it out, and pour in good gin, and then rim the glass with a little bit of lemon peel. I've wondered about that. That seems kind of engaging.
Well, that sounds good to me, too. I learned how to do my martinis from the bar tender in the Rendezvous Bar in the Kansas City of the Hotel the Muehlbach.
I'll be darned.
Yep. And my friend said, well, he won't give you the recipe. I said, well, you know, nothing venture, nothing gain. So I went up and asked him. He said, sure. So he told me. And I still make, I think, the best martinis in the world, other than he.
Well, I wish the opportunity would present itself so that I could find out for myself, Edward. Because I would gladly clink a martini stem with you anytime, anywhere.
Thank you so much. I would do the same with you.
Well, let me ask you, and this may be a little bit personal. I don't know how much you and your partner get out and around, but how far are you from Waco?
I would love to go, but unfortunately, I rarely get out of the house.
I understand. That was a bit presumptuous of me, so I apologize if I offended.
No, you didn't offend me. I'm just old. Oh, my.
Well, I tell you what, if you've got any friends or neighbors or anything who are so inclined, do please tell them about that Keystone protest down in Waco. It's one of those the more the merrier situations.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, I'd be down there with bells on or something else appropriate if I could get there.
I understand, because I know your heart's in the right place.
Well, you take care, and sometime when we're talking, I'll give you my recipe for a martini that I learned from this bartender in the Muehlbach Hotel in Kansas City. It was called the Rendezvous Room, and it was a beautiful Art Nouveau. They had original Maxwell Parrish paintings hanging on the wall. I mean, it was a beautiful place, and it was quiet. You could talk to each other. The music wasn't blasting you out of the front door.
Yeah, that's a big one with me. I do like to, I'm a conversation kind of guy.
Me too. Then my friend Richard and I, we'd go to Kansas City to buy Christmas gifts and things and before Christmas, and we'd always stay at the Muehlbach and always go to that bar and have a martini. And Richard told me, when I told him I was going to ask the bartender how he made them, Richard said, oh, he won't tell you. I said, well, nothing ventured, nothing gained. And
indeed.
He told me.
Indeed. Well, Edward, you have yourself a good evening.
Well, you do too, and enjoy talking with you again. And I'll swear, that bleach blonde creep, the cat.
Yeah, henceforward, if you see her, just change the channel, if for no other reason than for the sake of the cats.
Well, yes, because I was kicking the furniture, and the cats were scared to death.
Edward, take care.
You take care.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy Edward calling from Dallas. And I've had a request for this. I don't know how many of you have heard this. You want to talk about surreal? Check this out.
I'm Joni Ernst. I grew up castrating hogs on an Iowa farm. So when I get to Washington, I'll know how to cut pork.
Joni Ernst, mother, soldier, conservative.
My parents taught us to live within our means. It's time to force Washington to do the same. To cut wasteful spending, repeal Obamacare, and balance the budget. I'm Joni Ernst, and I approve this message because Washington's full of big spenders. Let's make them squeal.
Jesus, God, these people are getting frightening. And by the way, since I had the video but you didn't, you could just go look for Joni Ernst castration. I'm sure it'll pop up on YouTube. They show footage of pigs when Obamacare is mentioned. Nice. She wants to go to Washington and castrate, because... to protect the white women. We're almost out of time, but let's try to get one more call in. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
Hey, Jim, what are you doing?
I talked about the Affordable Care Act, and the price they quoted me was kind of high. I don't know if I'm a smoker or what. I'm going to try again, see what happens.
Well, you're in Louisiana, Stan, so there's no Medicaid expansion.
Exactly. I was thinking that was the main cause of it being because the state's not supporting it because it's Bobby Jindal nitwit. So did you think that? I think that's the major issue, don't you?
It absolutely is because just based on the history you've described in the past, I'm pretty much betting that you would probably qualify for the Medicaid expansion. But that's the reason all these right wing governors are trying for all their worth to avoid. Taking the Medicaid expansion simply because if they do that, there's going to be a whole lot of people who don't make a whole lot of money, who are thrilled to have health care, and that's the single greatest existential threat to the Republicans that presently exists.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It was just that's got to be it. I'm going to try again, go online, see if I can get it cheaper, but. I mean, the only bad habit I have besides listening to you, Malloy, is smoking. I got to quit that, but, yeah.
Well, I'm giving it a go myself. I was kindly gifted with a vaping device, and it's pretty successful. And it's working out nicely for me. My cigarette consumption has already dropped dramatically. I got to get out of here, though, Jim, because we're right up against it and fresh out of time. Let's talk again soon, okay?
All right, buddy. Check you later.
All right. See you now. Bye. Calling from the wilds of Louisiana, Stan. That's Jim. And it is time to get out of here. About a minute to go in the program. Thanks. Thank you, one and all, for the time you share in joining in the program, however you do it. Thank you for the kind contributions that keep this all going. Thank you to Thomas and Bob and to Mark and to Sal this evening for helping us reach our fundraising goal. Thank you very much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the News Ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and 8act.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Smith is next on the horn.